Soycles.
Holy crap, Janet.
Soycles.
Janet Protasiewicz for Supreme Court.
Damn it, Janet. I love you.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Does the mustard go in the fridge or the pantry? Greg Bach.
Yes.
Where do you put your mustard?
Once it's opened, undone, used once, fridge it goes.
I'm with Greg.
Thank you.
I also put it in the fridge.
Yes.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. We're going to keep talking about the election and people who would like to, because obviously this has been a really good, bad, in between emotional roller coaster for anyone who is engaged in politics. So as you have reflections and feelings and want to celebrate or call out any of the local races, please give us a call, shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. But this is the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour. So of course we're going to bring you some more fun topics with a little bit of sprinkling of politics instead of all politics. And I found this article in the Washington Post that, fridge or pantry, when we talk about certain condiments, certain different types of food staples and the debate on where they go. And I would like to hear from you. I'd like to hear from Greg and Jane. If there's any squabbles in the house on where something goes, like peanut butter. Or ketchup, because now there is more science behind what is safe versus what is for quality when it comes to these kinds of recommendations. Oh. But before we do that, since we teased it, what was the 414 cooking with their two dinners last night?
This is a text we got last hour who said, I was so nervous yesterday I made two dinners. And thank you for texting back, 414. It was white bean soup and Texas chili.
Okay.
Oh, so in the same family.
I was going to say if it was like a white bean soup, but then maybe like sandwiches. I'm like, well, I just feel like you ate your dinner in two stages. But two chili soups.
Two soups. But I think that's a smart move because you can then keep the soup.
Right.
And it's not like, oh, I made something that is only going to be good tonight and just made and ate both of them.
And chili's always better the next day anyway.
That is totally true.
There's nothing better than looking in your fridge and just seeing a big vat of chili.
Is that the best thing?
It's one of the best things. Okay, you know what? Whatever. This was supposed to be fun time
hour. It is a fun time hour. All right, 844-967-2789. What squabbles do you have over what condiments, whether they go in the pantry or the fridge? One of the weirdest ones, I always thought soy sauce was supposed to be in the pantry.
Yeah.
And then I once had a ex-boyfriend, then boyfriend, now ex. This is not Mike. Tell me that it's supposed to go in the fridge.
I've never put my soy sauce in the fridge.
What have I done? Usually my soy sauce comes in packets. No, I guess because, the soy sauce either makes two trips into the fridge with the rest of the, the unused.
The leftovers.
Or in a condiment bag. Or it's in a junk drawer. So really, you could take two trips wherever you feel.
So yeah, all right. So I don't know. I think this the the soy sauce might have been a quality thing.
Yeah.
Maybe that ex just liked it cold. What about peanut butter?
Peanut butter is always in the pantry.
It never even does. When it's the natural peanut butter.
Yeah, because I buy Skippy natural, which means it's not very natural.
Yeah. So you don't unless it has that thing of oil that makes it really hard to eat that you have to like stick. Like the big spoon, not just the teaspoon, like the big spoon,
yeah.
And stir it around and like get an arm workout for the day. That is natural peanut butter. Everything else is just posturing.
Yeah, no, thank you. I don't want that. My Skippy says no need to stir, and that's what happens because Papa Bear don't need a workout before he has a peanut butter and banana sandwich.
Well, what else? Is there anything else that you feel like needs to go in the fridge that you'd be surprised to learn that goes in the pantry?
I am married to a person who leaves the butter out all the time. There's always,
we leave butter out.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with it. I don't care either way. Just in my head, it was always butter should be in the fridge, but we have a thing. We like unused butter is in the fridge, but we always have a stick of butter in a butter thing with a little butter knife on top mm-hmm. of it. So beautiful. but it's always out. And that just makes sense. It's soft. It's pliable. It gets on that bagel. It doesn't rip up the bread.
I know. That is one of the most frustrating things in life is when you get to a nice restaurant and there's hot bread,
yes,
really good bread,
oh my God.
They bring you out rocks of butter. And you're like, what? By the time this butter softens, the bread is going to be cold.
This sounds like
how have you not thought this through, restaurants?
Wow, we just stumbled onto a Seinfeld episode. I went to a restaurant once and I asked for, like, do you have any room temperature butter? And she said, you can hold it in your hand for a little bit. I was like, I feel like that's the perfect customer service answer because it's true and rude all at the same time.
So I feel like peanut butter goes back and forth. I think because what this is saying, this is from the Washington Post. And so it says a lot of guidance surrounding condiments revolves around quality versus safety. And so the idea is to prevent the fruit from deteriorating, whether that means separation. So about like the oil and the
peanut butter,
off flavors or spoilage. That's a good word.
I love that
spoilage.
Word.
Spoilage. I was quick side note back to the election for a second. Someone had sent me a like nerd alert of these four guys who were analyzing all the results last night. And one of them just kept saying the word slippage and like slippage in like the wow counties. And I was like, this feels like you should be using a different word.
this election just got sexy.
This feels very Janet Jackson, circa Super Bowl.
We have an election malfunction. Nipplage.
All right. But here's some of the ones that, so peanut butter is a low water activity product that is commonly stored at room temperature. It does not require refrigeration. So that is settled.
Good to know.
Mustard. You both, I guess all of us would be surprised to know. There are no ingredients in mustard that spoil.
Really?
It is not necessary to refrigerate.
Yeah, I'm still going to do it.
I've always done that.
I've always done it too. But it specifically recommends refrigerating Dijon and horseradish mustard to preserve their distinct flavors.
Oh.
But it is not as far as it's going to go bad and make you sick.
Oh, all right.
So there you go. Now, this is probably a good one for my husband. Are you a ketchup fan?
Not huge, no.
Are you a ketchup fan?
Depends on the food. Like, I'll throw it on some things.
See, this is my natural reaction. Have you heard this story about my husband with ketchup?
This is great.
Okay. I feel, yes. No, I've not heard it. Tell me, please.
So, I've said this story. We matched on Hinge, which is how we met. But we did it about 6 weeks before I'd actually moved to Milwaukee. When I was like, I'd said on Hinge that I lived in Milwaukee, but I didn't actually live here
yet. I remember that part, you liar.
And so we were texting and talking for a long time before we finally met in person. And about a week into texting back and forth, he texts me, what are your feelings about ketchup?
That's important.
It's a very weird question to ask.
It's a deal breaker,
it's
man.
Important.
And I was like, I think it was a similar reaction to you. Like, it's good on fries. Like, it is a condiment that I enjoy with the appropriate foods in an appropriate amount.
Yeah. Onion rings in a pinch, you know.
There's pictures of this man just squirting ketchup into his mouth.
That sounds like a problem.
He has in his glove box like a stack of napkins and a handful of ketchup packets.
I have napkins, but not ketchup packets.
And so the running joke, my mom for Christmas every year gets him like huge things of like Costco size ketchup. And they get used. They certainly get used by the... He puts ketchup on white rice.
Okay.
Next level.
I put ketchup on a hot dog because there's something nostalgic about it. But like fries, hot sauce. Eggs, hot sauce. Grits, hot sauce. Oatmeal, hot sauce. I don't put ketchup on anything, I think, besides hot dogs. Or brats. Like a tube-based meat delivery system. That's where... the ketchup goes. And if you're listening in Chicago, yeah, I put ketchup on a hot dog. Deal with it, you freaks.
All right. Well, just now that we've gotten the ketchup story out of the way, but refrigeration will maintain the best product quality after opening. But here is the caveat. Consume ketchup within 6 months of opening, which is not a problem for Michael Sampson, but for everyone else who holds on to that bottle for a year and a half, you're like,
I want to get him a specially made bottle of ketchup that just says on the label, hey, Mike, take your time.
It's like, it's to the point where people, when they go to Canada, they bring back like the ketchup flavored chips that you can only get there.
Yeah.
And he finds them delicious.
Like, you see these ridiculous flavors and you're like, why is that not here? I feel like Like Hardee's alone, their food denotes we should have ketchup flavored potato chips. Yeah. Like our food is on a, based on a dare, seems like this is amazing. Why don't we have this?
All right. Hot sauce. Where do you keep your hot sauce in my bag?
We keep hot sauce in the fridge, and I don't even know why. I don't think you need to. But yeah, we don't. We have it in the fridge. We have like 9,000.
Are you a hot sauce house?
I have some. We have some hot sauce. It's in the pantry.
Yeah. All right. So hot sauce is okay at room temperature, but better maintains quality when refrigerated. So okay. There you go. You're both right. Molasses.
This is the one I've been waiting for, folks.
When was the last time you bought molasses, Jane?
I've used it in baking, but it's been 10 years.
I bought it in 1895 to help slow the bugs on the tree.
If you put molasses in the fridge, it's never going to move. Yeah.
I completely agree. I also don't know, like, maple syrup. I don't know the last time I ever had molasses, but its high sugar content makes it a low water activity food, making refrigeration unnecessary and maybe cumbersome.
It's one of my favorite sayings. That guy's moving slower than molasses in January.
Jeez, you'd have to get a pickaxe to get it out of there to refrigerate molasses.
And the last one, which I've only ever bought this product when I was trying to do the 40 under 40, not the 40 under 40, Milwaukee Business Journal. Whole 30. That's what I'm thinking of, which is where you cut out like dairy.
Oh, I forgot about that fat.
Whole grains, not whole grains. You like everything. You cut out most food, and you have to cut out dairy so you don't have butter. And the replacement is something called ghee. Jane looks me bewildered.
That sounds not appetizing.
That's what you wear when you're doing karate.
So it's a real bear to deal with, I guess, when it's refrigerated. So if you are a ghee fan, which is a form of clarified butter, is okay to store at room temperature, just like your real butter, as long as you put in a little sweet butter dish from your grandmother, like we do.
I'm in no danger of eating ghee.
All right, we'll be back in a minute. We're going to talk about the Brewers and their winning streak. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Creamy peanut butter, chocolate peanut butter.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Well, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair, and Mr. Greg Bach is here. Now, Greg, I have been holding on to this topic since I went to the Cubs Brewers game on Saturday. You look like you're not paying attention to the story.
I'm listening to everything you're saying.
You.
But I also hear you say the Cubs, so I go on. I'm listening.
Well, we won that game. I would imagine that you would have been excited.
Oh, that game. I thought you were talking about opening day.
No, I'm talking about Saturday.
Yeah.
So you're not listening.
I'm listening.
And I have to say, as much as you last Wednesday had been not very happy about the changes that are happening in Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah.
It may have just been because I was very cold at Wrigley at the game on Saturday. But I have to say, I kind of liked it.
How long was the game?
Well, we still left at the bottom of the sixth because I was so cold.
Okay, well then,
so. But started at 1:10 or 1:30? 1:10. I think the game was done by 4.
That's an average game. It's about 3 hours.
I'm guessing right now. I didn't time it myself, but I just felt faster.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just, I'm 45 and as I'm not, maybe I'm not becoming more conservative with age, but I'm just becoming more just whatever. I like baseball the way it is. And I don't need it to be faster. And I don't think the incremental changes, and I said it before, I don't think these small changes are going to bring hordes of fans. I just don't. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it shorter, more action-packed. Baseball's not an action-packed game. It's just not.
And I think as a person who I won't say I would never argue that I appreciate baseball and say the way that you appreciate baseball. But didn't Fancy Brian say that as a big baseball fan, that's his nickname here, that he was like he really thought that this was the right move, right? Yeah.
Brian Kelly and Luke Mathers went to the home opener on Monday. Brian said he could absolutely tell and thought it was fabulous, and it just really kept things moving along.
Maybe.
And then we started having a discussion about all the glove wrangling and the adjusting and the swing at the ball.
Okay, Grandpa. Jeez. Maybe I can go on their show and they can talk to me about this and kind of bring me into the light, because I don't know. It seems weird. And I really wanted to go to the home opener on Monday. I was very bummed, especially like a 10-0 blowout and then a 9-0 blowout.
Someone made that joke last night. Like, who got beat worse last night, the Mets or Dan Kelly?
Nice.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
It's the Mets.
Which is hilarious because I follow baseball as far as the headlines that make it into not like ESPN news, but like, oh, this popped up in my newsletter of all of the news that I am reading for the day. And the fact that that billionaire hedge fund guy spent $370 million on the Mets this year, only to get smashed by our little team right out of the gate this season. I was like, well, that feels good.
Yeah, I mean, that says a lot for a team that cut their payroll by $1 million this year from last year and is still far below the MLB league average, which is about $100 million. I mean, it says a lot, the fact this is where I wanted to go. I really do. I mean, we've got Christian Yelich, and Christian Yelich is going to pop one of these days.
Oh my gosh.
We spent so much money on him, and we are going to lose Corbin Burnes because of the arbitration thing. It's just, I'm remaining optimistic, but I'm not going to be surprised by anything that happens. We're sitting at the top of the division right now, of course, but there have been 4 games played. But the fact that we beat the Cubs and we beat the Mets so handily, I mean, okay, we've got some power. But then again, the Brewers always come with power in the beginning, and somewhere around the break, they're like, we're going to go to lunch, and it's going to hurt the rest of you. I'm going to make a chili, and then I'm going to make a white bean soup, eat them all at the same time, and then try to bat. Oh, my tummy.
Well, here, I saw this on TikTok, but someone was making the argument that I'm just going to be honest when I see things on TikTok, because I am still do not want this app to go away.
That's fine.
So I'm going to be honest with the interesting information that I gather from it, which I saw someone who made an interesting point as far as the MLB thinking that these changes are what's going to bring people back to the game. And his point as a baseball watcher was like, no, it's because you make it really hard to watch baseball, in that like a lot of the cable packages you get, you get like 27 out of the 30 teams. So you're like, but I really care about watching the Atlanta Braves. It's like, well, you don't get that one.
No.
Sorry.
That's a complaint I hear every single season. I pay for this package, I can't watch my team. I'm paying good money, I can't watch my team. That's craziness. Baseball, I'm sorry, and this is another old man opinion, if the game is sold out or above a certain amount, it should be on a station that's accessible by the people. And I mean, listening to baseball is great on the radio, but I ain't got time for that. Like, I'll watch a game, but like listening on the radio, I am all over the place then. Things are happening and I'm not listening to Bob Uecker. But yeah, yes, it make it hard to watch it. And with every year it changes. Oh, this year it's on Bally's. This year it's on FS1. Mm-hmm. This year it's on Prime. This year, come on.
Oh, it is on Prime. Amazon bought the rights?
I think so. I think there's some baseball on it. But like, that's the thing, is every year it's different, and every year you're asking me to shell out so much money and just to say, you can't watch this game. I want my money back. Let's get yourself a ballpark pass, friend. $37 a month. Go to every game. Go to every game.
Yeah. When's the first? So you haven't gone to a game yet.
I'm not scheduled to go to another game until next month, but I'm going to try to get to one maybe next week.
Well, you know that all season long we're giving away tickets, so maybe you can listen to the show one day and call in.
No, thank you. Hey, I've started listening to the show. I just haven't bragged about it, okay? I haven't bragged about it. I texted you.
The joke being that Greg Bach does not listen to our show when he's not on it.
I texted you one day as a response to something you all said on the show. It was very sweet, I thought, and you didn't respond back. So whatever. I said you were going to make him laugh, and you made him laugh, and whatever.
Whatever. All right. When we come back, we have a guest here who is going to talk to us about his new book. James Bastian is here. We're going to talk about Willa's Pursuit. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
We've got heart. We've got heart. Of course, but keep that old horse before the car. Who minds them pop bottles flying?
The hisses and boos.
The team has been consistent.
Yeah, we always lose,
but we're laughing 'cause we've got heart.
Quite fine. I spent my years with the spruce and the pine. The ground that I walk on is the boom and the log. I know the cant, hook, pike, pole, and chain dog.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Metnair. We got Greg Bach here. And our guest for this segment is Wisconsin resident and author Jim Bastian, who is here to talk about his new book, Willa's Pursuit, which is a historical fiction novel, and the sequel to his first book, Wisconsin Logging Camp, thus the music. What was that song, Jane?
I Am a Logger.
I Am a Logger.
Yes.
We were very in sync with our swaying.
Oh.
Jim, we missed out. You'll have to sway with us on the way out. But welcome to the show, Jim.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy the show. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you here. So let's start with the first book. Since Willa's Pursuit is a sequel, what is the premise of Wisconsin Logging Camp 1921? And how much of it is just baked into the title?
Well, the book is a historical fiction, as you referenced, and it deals with Wisconsin logging in 1920, and it follows the family of two immigrant families, one from Poland and one from England. And it is, I would say, 92% history. I originally started to write a history. That's what I wanted to write, and it was the catalyst to get me interested in writing and a historical book had to do with an article from an old Eau Claire newspaper in which the editor wrote about three loggers and a boy finding a petrified body in the woods. Well, I thought, who is this guy? What's he doing there? And as I started researching, there wasn't any information. Well, actually, wrongly interpreted that as great news because it meant there was a void in the historical record that I would be about to fill. So I went on a decades-long pursuit of researching who is this guy in the woods. With the advent of the internet, I disappointingly learned it was a hoax.
He needed
2 inches to fill. So I had this volume of research about logging. I had the payroll records. I was trying to track down the boy. I thought he was the best bet, since this was from the 1920s and 30s, that he might be still kicking and I would be able to get an interview with anyway. But it ended up being about a boy, because I had discovered that there were boys that rarely but periodically worked in logging camps. They were called chickadees, and they would scrape the residue from the horses that were on the ice trails and whatnot to make sure that when the loggers went out into the woods, that the sleds slid without impediments. So the book is about a chickadee. A 7-year-old boy immigrates from Germany and ends up as an orphan in the North Woods of Wisconsin. And while that sounds like a reach, it's actually based on true stories. And so it's an aggregate of snippets of immigrant families put together. And I didn't take the snippets to exaggerate. I took the snippets to coincide time and place. So it wasn't just this short story after short story. It was an aggregate of their experiences. And I didn't have enough time. There was too much information to have the search for the body in the same book. And so Willa's Pursuit is actually the culmination of that search. And Willa's Pursuit, although she doesn't know it when she starts, is about looking for the guy.
So, but then it I'm assuming, place, oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say it takes place some 40 years later, well, 50 years later, it's now 1970, and the sequel is Willa's father is the boy from book number one. So we're following the same family. They both take place in Wisconsin. So we're dealing with the same historical context, but different timelines, same family.
We're talking to Jim Bastian about his newest book and his first book, Willa's Pursuit, and then the first book is Wisconsin Logging Camp, 1921. So it sounds like so much historical research done for the first book, but then if you fast forward to the 1970s for the second book, what is the historical, what was the research that went into putting everything into context for that period?
I really like having rich content, and history supplies that. So rather than have to make things up, I rather just apply the rich historical context. Well, 1971 in Madison, Wisconsin. Madison was a flashpoint of the Vietnam War mm-hmm. protests. If you remember, Sterling Hall was blown up. Society was trending quickly from June Cleaver and Betty Crocker to sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And Madison was a big part of that process. And so there's a lot going on. So to plunk our protagonist into that environment seemed like it really could enrich the content and give me an opportunity to bring in that historical component. The second part of it that I found of interest that has the strong foothold in reality is psychology. I was a former high school psychology teacher. I have no credentials beyond a undergraduate degree in psychology, like 40% college graduates, but I have an interest. And so I pulled together, that interest has allowed me to do some poking around. And Madison was also a part of the fundamental change in the field of psychology from Freud, Jung, from Adler to the behavioralists, Harlow, B.F. Skinner, and experimental psychology. Well, our protagonist, Willa, the daughter of the boy from book one, is a graduate student in psychology in Madison in 1971, and she takes part in an experiment, and it's a risky experiment, and she has a traumatic experience from it. And so that brings all of those pieces together. In fact, the traumatic experience she has is a Harry Harlow experiment on sensory deprivation. And you might remember from your Psych 101 days, or your listeners will, where you have the two baby rhesus monkeys. One is clinging to a wire mesh form, and the other is clinging to a wire mesh form covered with terry cloth. And what that was Harlow's groundbreaking research on sensory deprivation, and found that the baby monkey that was clinging to just the wire mesh had social deprivation development issues and brain development shortcomings, whereas the monkey that was clinging to the terry cloth had more normal development. Well, that's the impact of even modest changes in sensory deprivation. Well, enterprising researchers weren't going to let it go at that. And so they wondered, golly, I wonder what would happen to graduate students if we completely blocked off their sensory deprivation, completely blocked off their senses. And they were plunged into tanks of water, blindfolded with tanks and wetsuits and whatnot. And what they found is that the brain doesn't like it very much when it can't distinguish between reality and what's going on in your head. And some students who underwent that experiment had some bad experiences. Willa is one of them.
It's funny because I feel like people pay for that these days. Aren't there like deprivation tanks that people pay a lot of money to go like float in water in the dark?
I flew to Dubai and paid some guy to just cut off my senses.
Didn't Aaron Rodgers essentially just do this?
No, he did ayahuasca and he's immunized from everything.
No.
Similar principle, he went into a dark room. But you're exactly right.
I've been in
but
a dark room.
There's a huge difference between sensory decrease and total sensory deprivation.
Okay.
It's the difference between going into a pitch black auditorium and your brain is trying to figure things out, and then light a single candle in a corner of the auditorium. That small increase in perception makes all the difference in the world. And the tanks that people are spending a lot of money on to submerge themselves in are really sensory reduction experiences, not sensory deprivation in its entirety.
Got it. All right. Well, so then in total, between the initial research when you thought that the story about the boy was real, to the release of Willow's Pursuit, which was April 15th is when it's coming out?
Yes, it's out now, actually. Oh, it's available. It's out
now. And so long have you been working on these stories?
Well, the original story that I read was from a Wisconsin conservation magazine published in 1978. I think I read it maybe in 81. That's what sparked the research that began with the logging. So it's been a long time.
Wow.
So when people say, well, how long does it take you to write a book? Well, 5 decades?
I'll tell you how long it takes to write two books.
In this case, it did.
Wow. So this was something that sparked your interest. And at this point, because you've done a lot of different things. You've been a high school teacher, as you said. Then you went out and got your MBA and you worked in business. And so was this always kind of in the back of your head, even as you were having different careers?
It was really a lot of interest in it. And the more I looked into it, even after the disappointment of finding out that this article that prompted the initial investigation was a hoax, these immigrant family experiences, particularly as it pertains to the state of Wisconsin, was so interesting to me that I continued to do background research. For example, what I was unaware of. So northern Wisconsin was cut over of the pines. And people were then, in 1920, they were beginning to log the hardwoods. Well, there were millions of acres of cut over land with no value. They're huge tree stumps and rocks. Well, enterprising realtors went to Europe following World War I when these immigrants are getting on boats to come here to sell them farms. And they would prepay for these farms, and they'd show them brochures of the beautiful farms. Well, what they were buying was 40 or 80 acres of stumps and rocks. Oh, so these poor folks showing up here having prepaid. Now, these are destitute people prepaying for these properties, and there were no refunds. Yeah. Some would only require 50% down. Regardless, this is buyer's remorse on steroids when you get there and look at your farm. And, you know, you're going to dig up stumps that are the size of a bed and without a tractor. And you have hundreds of them, and then to plant your farm. Also, there isn't a woods to cut down to build your farmhouse with. And there are communities in northern Wisconsin, Little Croatia, and there's some others that escape me at the moment, that are entire communities from that originated with immigrants from that country that came here and got hoodwinked in buying this land. So it was an unscrupulous beginning that brought many of these immigrants to northern Wisconsin. That's just one instance.
And Jim, it must have just been, everything must have been so hard just because of the time period that it happened in. And, you know, like you said, not having a tractor, maybe you couldn't even afford a horse. Everything must have just been such a struggle to even survive.
Well, that's really an insightful comment. And we often don't think of our ancestors as having gone through that. But when you think of the devastation of World War I, you have tens of millions of young men killed, which means tens of millions of widows and orphans. You have Europe completely devastated. And think of the farms and the villages and whatnot. So you have destitute people, children whose educations were stopped in their tracks for 3 or 4 years or more. Well, if you're a second grader and lose 4 or 5 years of your education, you've lost a lot. So you had people that were coming here without that value of education, destitute, and then you have the Spanish flu pandemic that they're greeted to when they get here. There also was social transformation occurring from Victorian and Edwardian to the Roaring Twenties. They're in that same. That's one reason I was attracted to these two time frames, because they were transformational.
So as far as with the 2 minutes we have left, Jim, what kind of, like, if you like this book, they will like your book. So what kind of reading or reader do you think would really appreciate Willow's Pursuit and Wisconsin Logging 1921?
Well, anyone who is interested in history light. They don't want to know names, dates, and places. But if the history is there and it's a part of the story, you learn as you go, and it's painless. anyone who would have been interested in reading Red Badge of Courage or Tom Sawyer would really enjoy the first one, which has a young boy who is going through those kind of trials and tribulations. Anyone interested in the paranormal might be interested in Willa's Pursuit, because her traumatic experience is actually triggered, it triggers a very extraordinary experience.
Awesome. Well, we will put both of those links for both books on our show notes for today. Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. They both sound super interesting.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed the time with you.
Absolutely. Have a great day. All right. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about who's at Laughing Tap this weekend.
With the great and the small. If you wish to join us, we'll find you the room. Strike up the fiddle if you sing the tune.
Laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one, they'll be standing in lines.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. He is Greg Bach. Greg Bach.
Yes.
Who's at the Laughing Tap this weekend?
Your mom. Boom, comedy.
She's been at the Laughing Tap before, but not on stage.
No, but it was lovely to have her there.
Yeah,
and
she had fun.
You and Mike. Amir K is here.
Okay.
This weekend. Five shows. This is a big one.
That's a big lineup.
Yeah. It's a show on Thursday, two on Friday, two on Saturday. Amir K has been on Mad TV. He's done Just for Last Comedy Festival, which is the oldest, biggest comedy festival.
Have you ever gone to Just for Last Comedy Festival?
As a performer?
No. Oh, I mean, just thanks. In general.
Thanks.
No, I haven't gone as a performer. I went for fun, and it was awesome.
I've never gone. I would like to go one day, but someday I will go. Very funny. We have a clip.
We do have a clip.
Yes.
Sometimes I thought that too. I was like, I wish Doogie could talk. And then I rethought it. And I'm like, dude, he's so needy. There's no way. He's so needy. If Doogie could talk and he had a cell phone, I'd leave the house for 5 minutes. I'd check my voicemail. It'd be like, you have 30 new voice messages. Boop. Hey, what's going on? It's me, Doogie. Listen, I know you said we're going for a walk. I just kind of wanted to touch base. And see what time you were thinking. Go ahead and give me a call back. I'm at who? Boop. Hey, it's me again. Listen, have you seen my red ball? Yeah, you don't know what we take to the park? Can't seem to find her. Anyways, no big deal. Call me when you can. Boop. The Amazon packages are here. Hey, you're not gonna want to go in the living room. I couldn't hold it. Boop! I found the ball. Hell yeah! Boop! I'm just kidding, it's me, Doogie.
You guys let me do that way too long. Thank you so much.
I'm not kidding you. The what precedes that discussion is like another minute and a half, and it's all hilarious. It's just him. The whole set basically is him talking about being an Iranian-born individual who now lives in America to his dog, and it's so funny.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful, and I'm so looking forward to having him. I can't wait to meet him. He just seems like a real cool guy, and I there's nothing better than having really cool people performing at the club.
And I have to say, he has the best set of hair I think I've ever seen in my entire life.
Really?
His hair is gorgeous, and I'm not going to lie, a little jealous, will be a little standoffish at first as I stare at his locks, and then I'll warm up. His hair is amazing.
Oh, I just looked it up.
Wow.
It does look. It's very, very good hair.
Yeah.
So five shows. Any sold out? Where are the tickets looking right now?
Available.
Tickets are still available.
Yep. So go to laughingtap.com.
Best deal in town.
Seriously, $20 a show, no drink minimums. You're getting to laugh with three amazing comics.
Who are the other two comics?
Kate Kincaid, who I've actually never seen personally, but is vouched for by our feature, who is Sohrab Farouzesh. And then Amir K. So it's a host, feature, and headliner.
It's a good lineup.
It's a great lineup. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
So I love comedy.
I love comedy. What's
Christopher Walken? I don't know what you were doing.
We were doing something, but I was like, I don't know what we're going for.
Put
right
your hands
now.
Up. No.
Didn't Pedro Pascal do some kind of weird voice when he was on SNL recently? That was funny.
Yes, it was. Nah, I can't do that.
What was the premise?
The premise is he wakes up from a coma and that's his personality.
Oh gosh.
So if you watch that clip, that sketch, then watch his interview with Seth Meyers the following week. It's so wonderful.
And he does it again.
Yeah,
right?
They're talking about, oh my god, it sounds like a Valley Girl walk-in. Oh my god.
And if staying on the Pedro Pascal theme,
Let's just always stay on him.
Came across my Twitter feed, Pedro Pascal as mushrooms. So there's a picture of Pedro Pascal in a blue shirt and pants, and then next to him is a blue mushroom that actually looks like what he's wearing.
Yeah.
All tied into The Last of Us and the fungi and all that. It's hilarious.
They did another one too where like he was wearing an outfit and I think they compared him to a duck. If you watch the Pedro Pascal Oscar Isaac autocomplete interview,
I heard it's really good. You've told me this.
Oh my god, it's for the soul. I watch it once a week. It makes it feel so good. Yes, laughingtap.com. Amir K this weekend, 5 shows. Please come on down. We'd love to excuse me, I'm getting a little emotional here. No, I should have a cough. We'd love to see you down there and we're gonna have a great time. So
sounds fun.
It is fun. You're fun.
You're fun. And this show was fun.
And it's Easter weekend too.
I forgot about that. Gonna go see John Wick on Sunday.
That's your penance.
Well, it's Bridget's birthday on Friday, and it's a weekend of birthday activities. And because I can't be there on Saturday, I'm driving them all on Friday. They're going to drive around to breweries and do their thing. And then on Sunday, it's going to be me and her doing brunch, go see John Wick, and then probably go home and fall asleep.
I referred to it as a blood ballet and was told that is an accurate description.
I heard it's the best one of all 4.
Oh.
I'm holding back judgment. We'll see. But
favorite of the 3?
The first one. You've got the great, like, I feel like what happened with that movie is that, or those movies, is that he made this great movie and then all of a sudden it was very popular. They said, we want a sequel. And then he's like, oh, I got to make a universe now with all this extra stuff, which is fine. And it's not bad. It didn't look like a movie conceived in the idea of, oh, I'm going to build this like 10 movie universe where blah,
blah. But isn't there an argument that Star Wars is the same?
How do you mean? Weigh your words carefully.
Well, I am not enough of a Star Wars nerd to know what is true or not true. But didn't it start as... I mean, it's not like George Lucas had this entire universe plotted out before he wrote the first script.
Yes, he did.
I've heard conflicting...
It started in a thing called the Journal of the Wills, which is the prequel.
You have 1.5 minutes before this show ends.
No, we're going over. FCC, do something. I don't care. There's definitely some things out there that were not planned, but he conceived the first trilogy as 3 movies. You see A New Hope in the theaters in 1977. It's not called A New Hope. It's called Star Wars. It wasn't until Empire they renamed it. But then there was always the thing of the next 3. And he's like, I'm not going to make those. And then he's like, I'm going to make those. And then they're like, we'll make 3 more. And people are like, please stop already.
We are going to table this for next week.
Oh, yeah.
And bore anyone who's not a Star Wars fan, potentially. Because I have a lot of follow-up questions to what you just said. And I'm going to do my research in between.
I can't wait.
But you'll have to come back tomorrow to hear about the coffee that makes you poop. Because we never got to that Starbucks story.
Doesn't make you poop?
And I think coffee in general does, but apparently when you add olive oil, even more so. Well, this was a super fun show today. It flew by. Thank you to Joe Zepecki, who was here for the first hour. Greg Bach, always love having you here. Thank you to everyone who called. We had a ton of callers today.
Lots of texts.
It's always more fun when you are engaged and you are having your voice heard on the show. So keep it up. And for now, we're going to go on with our Hump Day Wednesday and be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Make them laugh. Make them laugh. Make them laugh.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.